There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Following On podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism. Before we kick off the show, I just wanted to take a moment to remind you that the ICC Men's Cricket T20 World Cup Final is taking place in Barbados this summer. This, by default, gives all of my fellow cricket fanatics the perfect excuse to go and book a holiday to Barbados in June and experience firsthand the euphoric atmosphere at the Kensington Oval, the cricket mecca of the Caribbean. If the cricket alone isn't enough to tempt you, then let me be the one to remind you that a trip to Barbados can also include leisurely strolls along the breathtaking coastline, mouth-watering flavours of the world-class Bajan cuisine, and of course, plenty of rum. Head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today to book the trip of a lifetime to Barbados, the best place to be a cricket fan. Hello and welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman. Alongside me, Jared Kimber. We are back in South East London after a few days off doing the washing, some family stuff, looking after the kids, taking them to school, picking them up, just being dads again. It's time to reflect on the Ashes. You've forgotten about it already? Well, thankfully, we're here to remind you it happened. Good afternoon, Jared. What a beautiful day. Sun's still going. Test cricket should be played into October, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't like to talk about global warming, but look at what it's doing for cricket in England. It's extending the summer to such a point. You know, I mean, they're supposed to be playing a Euro T20 league, which I'm supposed to be at, of course. I wouldn't have even been here. But instead, in Malahide at the moment, Ireland, Scotland and Netherlands are playing. And you shouldn't be able to play cricket in Scotland, sorry, in Ireland, most of the year, let alone in September. And then all the teams are bashing over 200 every game. It's incredible, Seed. So, you know, yay for global warming.
I suppose one of the great things about cricket, Test cricket, is the fact that it gives you a few days just to mull over what you've just seen. Because, you know, we were kind of caught up in that. I mean, the last two Test matches, there's 9 days of action in in under 2 weeks. And sometimes it's quite difficult to really separate yourself from what you've seen. So I thought, let's return to the template that served us so well. I mean, it really did serve us well. Have our review of the series, starting, of course, with the player of the series. It's Steve Smith, isn't it?
I mean, have we gone back? Has producer Lucy gone back to the stats to see how often we gave a player that? I think we gave a player that in a couple of days he missed, where he wasn't in the test match. You know, it was one of the most incredible. You know, let's put it a little bit in context. You have a player to begin with who doesn't fit into the system. He took a 7-wicket haul as a leg spinner as a young man. He clearly was never a leg spinner. He was an incredible fielder. There were times it looked like he was playing for New South Wales, kind of as a fielder and part-time bowler. Weirdly, not the only Australian cricketer who didn't fit into the cookie cutter to do that of recent times. Glenn Maxwell was another one when he started for Victoria. He then plays for Australia in a test match, plays at Headingley against Pakistan, makes 70 batting at number 8 on a green top that was just an incredible bowling pitch. Muhammad Amir and Muhammad Asif, remember those guys? Back in their pre-ban days, bowling incredibly. They completely...
A bit like Smith, really.
Yeah, completely skittling through Australia. He comes out and smashes 70. And I went to that press conference. I can't remember if it was me or Brighton covered up, but one of us asked Ricky Ponty, well, based on that innings, is Steve Smith going to be ever a top 6, top 7 batsman? And Ricky Ponting's like, no. Now, Ricky Ponting's a pretty good judge of cricket. So that, you know, and there are a lot of people, myself included, even when he got good, and he was clearly a good player of spin quite early on, and it was Danish Canary, he kept launching back over his head at Headingley that day. Even then, most of us thought, even if he gets good against spin, he's still going to be a, you know, an all-rounder at best. He can't play the moving ball. He looked like his technique wasn't made to play the ball if it wasn't straight. He then comes back into the side, and I think he averaged 30-odd in his first series in India. So again, you bring him back to play in spin. He then plays in England and does very well in that 2013 Ashes. Becomes what he becomes, this incredible run-scoring batsman where he basically takes slips and gully out of play by the way he plays. Probably the first batsman to do it that completely since Bradman. I think the Bradman comparisons, you can't really compare them on runs and how much better they are than other players in their era, but you can actually compare them technique-wise, which people don't seem to do as much. He then goes on to, obviously, you know, I mean, in an era where we have Williamson, AB de Villiers wasn't that long ago, Hashim Amla wasn't that long ago, but you got Williamson, Kohli, and Root. He basically outbats all of them, and they're all incredible batsmen. He then becomes the best batsman in the world, and he gets caught in two cheating things. People don't mention the other one. He got involved in the brain fade incident where the Australian team were looking over the shoulder of the player, pretending they were talking to them, but actually looking at the dugout to see if they should be reviewing decisions. And then he's then got involved with another one. Has a year out from the sport, plays a bunch of T20 leagues and doesn't do very well, and then comes back in his first test match and makes 100 in each innings when... The one thing that everyone wasn't sure about was whether he could do it when the ball was moving around still. People were still not sure about that. Well, he did it twice at Edgbaston. And then goes on to have one of the most incredible series any Test batsman has ever played. I mean, you know, you put all that in context, what an incredible story he is. And I'm not sure what stops him.
I mean, brilliantly put. I mean, what else can you say about Smith? But at times when I was watching him play this summer, you know, another very famous figure came to mind, not from the world of cricket, but, you know, somebody else who essentially has sat there and watched the parameters of what is acceptable, you know, very much learnt the basics, the rules and regulations, the laws about how you supposedly go about things, and torn them up and essentially... done it in a way that has left everybody else bewildered about what you can actually do to countenance somebody who can do the basics right, but essentially play the game to their own rules. And Steve Smith has been doing this for quite a while. And it's just a question of when people change for him rather than just accepting that he's not going to come back their way. And that, in essence, is exactly what Donald Trump's done in America.
I did not think you were going to compare it to Donald Trump. I thought you were going Tiger Woods there. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because so someone contacted me on Twitter and they said, what's he doing? Like, why is he averaging, you know, 20 more than a normal great would, or whatever, was it 15 more than a normal great would? And I was like, well, he's cut out the slips and caught behind. So by basically playing out, standing outside off stump or on off stump, he takes away the channel where most wickets go. That's where batsmen are at their most vulnerable, because the ball's just outside their head. So it's just outside their eye line. It's dangerous enough that it's near off stump. You don't know whether to play or leave. It brings in a lot of different things. Once you move out to off stump to do that, you take away that danger, which is incredible. I mean, you're literally hacking the game, right?
But this is exactly what Donald Trump's done.
No, that's what I was going to say. But then you also need to be incredibly, you need your hand-eye coordination to be much better than everyone else, because most players are eventually going to miss the ball on the stumps. And you could actually argue that teams don't bowl on the stumps enough to Steve Smith, and that certainly, I think Crickviz might have put some stats up about that later on. But the thing is, when teams do bowl on the stumps to him, he usually just flicks the ball through the leg side. Now, a bit like Donald Trump, in no other way, is that Donald Trump got such a career of everyone kind of, at this stage, even his supporters kind of know he's a showman more than a real person. Everything he says is basically a lie or a half lie or, a stretching of the truth to a point where it almost doesn't matter anymore. And it's a bit the same with Steve Smith. You should be bowling at the stumps, but because he keeps hitting the ball off the stumps, you don't bowl at the stumps, which means you feed him in other ways.
Exactly.
The only difference I would have between them is Steve Smith does seem like a better person.
Was Donald Trump ever banned for a year for Sandpapergate?
I think I think there's a lot of things. There's a lot of current allegations against Donald Trump. I don't know how far you want me to go into them on a cricket podcast.
No, I'll just finish with this one thing, right? What was Bradman's first name?
Yeah, okay. You bring it all together. You've been thinking about this is a 2 a.m.er, isn't it?
No, I'm not Lucy the producer. I'm not working at 2 a.m. Just one note as well. I mean, Mel Farrell wrote a piece about the greatness of Steve Smith, and the fact that Ben Stokes achieved great things. We'll never, ever be able to forget what he achieved at Headingley. And I think it'll probably take us about 20 years before we see something like that happen again.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the way that Stokes is, he sort of fits into the moment of the day, doesn't he? Because he didn't have an all-time great series, although he, considering the batting in this series, it was, you know, incredible. His bowling, I think, I don't know what he ended up average with the ball.
45, seven wickets at 45, something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, we know he can play better than this. I'm not sure he can bat much better than this, although if he keeps improving, maybe he can. But for he was a man of moments, whereas Smith was always the man at all times. Up until that final sort of failure where he got caught at leg slip, he was still, you know, the most important person at all times. And he would, even in Headingley, he allowed for Stokes to play that innings by not being in the test match, didn't he? So, you know, in every way, Smith was the player of the series. And what Stokes did a couple of times this summer was incredible moments.
And also, you know, we've really needed this 3 or 4 days off the back of that Ashes series. It's been, in terms of time, the shortest Ashes series of all time. 5 tests in 46 days. We've been allowed to just chill out with our kids. It would have been nice if Stokes and also his mum. I mean, I know there's lots been read about feeling sorry for Ben Stokes, and we don't need to go into the ins and outs of it, but I just feel sorry for the family, really, especially to go through a tragedy like that so many years ago and unfortunately have to go through it again. That's it's pretty unedifying.
Well, look, we are journalists and we know a lot of people, and they would usually say things along the lines of, you know, it's in the public's best interest. The most hard-nosed journalists I know, I don't think a single one has said to me that Ben Stokes, you know, the story about his mother, really, it's not even about Ben Stokes, which is ridiculous, is in the public's best interest. It didn't need to be written. You know, it was horrible. And it's nothing about cricket. You know, there's... But Ben Stokes is going to probably get those sorts of stories. You know, not... Hopefully there's nothing else like that in his thing. But those sorts of... He's now a celebrity, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. And that's the sort of story that you write about a celebrity. And, you know, I worked with the ECB... quite a few years ago to try and get the profiles of their cricketers up. Now, they didn't end up bringing me in because they were a bit afraid of me at the time. But I was saying that you don't have any celebrity cricketers in this era. And it's ridiculous when you think that, you know, there's that thing on James Anderson on the back of the bus, the wellness, whatever it is. And it says on it, James Anderson, England fast bowler. In a way that you probably don't need it for Raheem Sterling or, you know, Jessica Ennis or Dina Asher-Smith in, you know, a year or two if she wins the gold medal. You still need that for cricketers. Ben Stokes probably now at that level where he doesn't need that. So that's great for the game. But to pour him through the other celebrity nonsense, I mean, it was a dreadful article and, you know, it shouldn't have existed.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Following On podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism. If your passion for travel is on par with your passion for cricket, then I have some excellent news. The ICC Men's Cricket T20 World Cup final is being hosted in Barbados this June, which makes it the perfect destination for your summer holidays this year. To make the most of your trip, you can also experience 8 matches from the series in Barbados, including England against Scotland and England against Australia. In under a month's time, you could be spending your days exploring the vibrant streets of Bridgetown, drinking rum in the sunshine, and experiencing exotic Bajan delicacies. In the culinary capital of the Caribbean, there truly is something for everyone. There's no need to wait a second longer. Head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today to book the trip of a lifetime to Barbados, truly the best place to be a cricket fan.
Well, it's Smith, isn't it? And it's Australia retaining the Ashes, but it's also, I think, Australia not winning the Ashes, and England and their captain Joe Root live to fight another day.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, and also the best Ashes since 2005. Although 2009 was a vastly underrated series. It just paled in, I suppose, comparison to what had happened 4 years previously.
No, this is a much better series than 2009. I mean, they're similar, actually, 2009, because both times you had flawed teams sort of coming together. But this was a better series. It had higher highs. It had closer test matches. Obviously, you had the great draw in Cardiff. But this had a... It's had a decent draw in Lords and then a brilliant Headingley test. And you had Stokes, Jofra, Smith, Cummins, Hazelwood. I just think it was a little bit better. But 2009 was quite a good series as well. But yeah, it basically comes down to Australia seemed happy with retaining the Ashes and maybe took the foot off. Well, I think they definitely took the foot off a little bit for that last test. And England have probably done enough that Denley, Root, Burns lived to fight on. And, you know, had they lost this series and they'd been crushed in that last test, it's very obvious that Root was in all sorts going to New Zealand, where New Zealand are a really good side at the moment. And then South Africa, maybe not quite as good as New Zealand, but there's a lot of talent there as well. Although their best bowler took 17 wickets, potentially in the county cricket yesterday. So England have just fought out a little bit. That's why the series sort of, you know, we were talking about this being a potentially great series. It's probably just gone beneath that because it did fizzle out in that last test. It really needed England to probably...
If England had batted out that Old Trafford test, yeah, it would have retained the ridiculousness and set up that last test match. And you would have thought that Australia wouldn't have been so mind-frazzled as well. So, that probably needed to happen. But again, that just shows how amazing 2005 was.
Yeah, and there aren't many great test series. You know, we talked about it during this series. You know, there's a reason people remember 2001 Australia India and 2005 Ashes, is because there aren't that many. And this was an incredible series. It's probably just not at that level, and it did fizzle out, and that's part of the problem. But you know, we did have a test series that was where both teams could win, or one team could win it and another team could draw it coming into the last test. In five test match series, that's, you know, there aren't, how many Ashes drawn series can you remember in your lifetime?
No, this is the first one.
Yeah, you know, and you're really,
and I'm
old.
Really old. Ball of the series. Well, there's two, I imagine. One from Australia, one from England. I mean, for me, okay, well, I'll go, because we haven't discussed ahead of... we haven't compared notes. The two balls, actually. There's the one, Jofra Archer to knock out Steve Smith. And then there's kind of the same ball, but it curved from two different bowlers that ended up with the same result. And that was the dismissals of Joe Root for a duck from Hazelwood and Cummins.
Yeah, oh, well, for me, the Jofra ball's the ball of the series. It lit up the series, and realistically probably changed it. It allowed England to win a test at that stage. And they weren't that far from winning the Lord's test as well, so it gave them a chance of winning maybe two tests, one ball. That's a hell of a ball. You don't get that very often, do you? That's a ball of the century right there. It also changed the way we think about cricket a little bit, you know, with the concussion substitute coming in. And it was a brutal, brutal moment. Not just that ball, but everything that built up to it. So I know what you mean about the 90-mile-an-hour, you know, outswing off leg cutters to Joe Root. But they don't compare to what Jofra did. And that was, you know, Jofra lit a fire under this series. And, you know, we don't know how long he'll be able to do what he does. He's already bowling 7 and 8 over spells. To be fair, so's Pat Cummins at that pace. You know, if you look at Shoaib Akhtar and Sean Tate, for them to get to similar and even quicker paces, it took everything out of them, and they would be exhausted at the end. We saw with Mitchell Johnson one summer, what was it, 8 tests over, Australia and South Africa, of bowling that fast. He could never do it again. He could do it for individual balls, but he couldn't do it. So we don't know what Jofra's going to become. And, Sean Pollock no one ever talks about this, but Sean Pollock was really quick and ended up being a fraction above Tim Murta. Sorry, Polly, if you're listening.
but not sorry, Tim.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a great honour for Tim Murta to be. But do you know what I mean? We know Peter Siddle's a perfect example. Peter Siddle comes into Test cricket, proper 90-mile-an-hour bowler. First ball in Test cricket, smashes Gautam Gambhir in the head. The only way he's smashing Gautam Gambhir or his equivalent in the head now is if someone's sweeping him. And, you know, he's not that pace bowler anymore, and you do slow down. So Jofra at the moment is so exciting, and you just hope he can go on. But for that one little moment, if this is all we get of Jofra 95 miles an hour, it's still incredible, isn't it? And then watch, you know, that one ball then follows on with that incredible spell at Headingley as well, where he basically bowls in low 80s and still takes wickets. You know, for me, you know, just it lifted the ashes. And had Jofra not come in at that time, I think Australia, I'd just sort of cruise it from then on in. It would have been a very, very dull. It would have been a bit like maybe 2013, maybe like 2015. Sort of dull and obvious from then on in.
2017, 2018, I reckon. Shot of the series. Well, Ben Stokes at Headingley. Cutting Cummins away for four. I imagine that would be my shot of the day. Oh, shot of the series. What would yours be?
I think it was Ben Stokes at Headingley, reverse sweeping out of the rough for six. Look, I mean, you know, and it's a bit, if it was obviously compared to the Botham innings. It's a much better innings than the Botham innings, having seen both of them. I'm not one of them live. I'm not quite as old as you, but it's a much better innings than the Botham innings. But there's still that, and Kusal Pereira. There's a certain point where, if you're watching it, there's a bunch of times that should go wrong. One of the times that should go wrong is when he's reverse sweeping out of the rough for six over the sweeper's head. You know, he should have hit that straight up in the air or missed it. And there was the other one. You said the cut of Cummins. It was also the reverse paddle shot that he played off Cummins.
Those two shots you mentioned, the reverse paddle and the reverse sweep, are more audacious shots. But in terms of an iconic image, and we saw it on social media over the last 24 hours, that moment will live forever.
Yeah, maybe you're right. The paddle that he played over his shoulder, where he hit it for six, which might have been the first out of the ordinary shots he was playing. I can't remember if he'd already
attacked. No, the line. Sweep was before
it. So he'd attacked line, but he hadn't attacked the quicks yet. The first time he tried to play that paddle over his shoulder, so he's facing Pat Cummins, who no one can hit normally in this series. And he tries it the first time, and it's a terrible shot. The attempt that he played, it looks like you or me trying the shot. We were like, we kind of know what the shot is, but we're not actually sure how to put it together, and there's a really fast bowler coming in. And he missed it. And then the next shot, he plays a very much more organised version of it. So what I'm saying is that there was, the shot of the series was about seven shots that he played in that innings. You know, you could also have every time Steve Smith walked across his stumps and flicked the ball to back of square leg, but they weren't quite as much fun as what Ben Stokes did.
No Anodyne Press conference moment of the series today. We're just going to listen to an interview taking place on Wednesday between Joe Root, England captain, and Ian the Moose Abrahams.
Joe, first of all, a really good summer. I mean, winning the World Cup and then drawing the Ashes series.
Yeah, brilliant summer of cricket. I think we've been blessed with some fantastic support throughout the whole year. And I think it was really fitting, actually, that we finished with a win like we did.
The World Cup, you'll remember forever and a day. I mean, that wasn't the most incredible day of sport, wasn't it?
Yeah, that Sunday was very special. That last hour in particular, watching Joss and Ben build that partnership, get somewhere close, and then Ben to play as he did towards the end there was just breathtaking. And a super over, you couldn't really have written it, could you? That game, how it all unfolded, it made for great drama. It's great to be a part of, and I think a very fitting way to finish what was a fantastic tournament.
We've got your tours coming up on TalkSport in Sri Lanka and South Africa. I mean, again, a long period of time away from home. So how do you now switch off for the next couple of months?
Just probably go away for a week or so and just spend some time at home. And that in itself is a bit of a getaway, if you like. So just to be around the family, do normal things. No, I'm quite looking forward to cooking a few meals up and just spending a few nights at home in my own bed. So, that's going to be a really nice way to refresh and get ready again for what's the next exciting tour.
Unluckiest of the series. Well, it's got to be batsmen, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly batsmen. I mean, you thought openers, and I think that's quite fair as well. You know, you don't really want to broad in incredible form, especially the left-handers, and Jofra at the other end. I mean, and let's remember, Anderson didn't even play. And then you've got, you know, Cummins, Hazelwood. Pattinson didn't even take any wickets, and you know, he looked incredible at times as well. And Mitchell Starc obviously blew through a couple of people. There's some bowlers in this series, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And for me, you know, this is one of those series. I remember Australia played the West Indies a few years ago, and a bunch of batsmen averaged 30 to 35 in that series. And the press back home was, oh, no one can bat, you know. But actually, averaging 30 to 35 in that series on terrible pitches that favoured bowlers wasn't that bad. And I think you're going to see that with, you know, Marnus not going on to make 100, Rory Burns not making as many big scores as he should have, and Joe Denley, you know, not making 100 and also, you know, failing a lot. They've all had better than average batting series in this. I'm not sure that means any of them are long-term players. But this is the problem, and this is the way that we view cricket, is I think people are going to look back, and some other young guy's going to come in, and he's going to play against a far worse attack, and he's going to average 45. And everyone's going to be like, well, Rory Burns is only averaging 30 in Test cricket, whereas in actual fact, we know that in that particular series, what he did was worth a lot more than that. You know, it's a weird time to be a batsman, because it is really hard to bat in Test cricket at the moment. And this is not, you know, we made a lot of fun about Australia and England not batting very well in this series. But the numbers worldwide are saying the last 2 years, batsmen have basically, what's happened is CEOs and cricket boards have worked out that people really like exciting Test cricket, and they just changed the pitches. And on top of that, we have an incredible crop of bowlers. You know, people keep saying to me, who's the best bowler in the world at the moment? Is it Bumrah? Is it Cummins? Is it Rabada? Is it Jofra? They're missing out James Anderson, who's been tearing it up. They're missing out Trent Bolt. They're missing out Kemar Roach. Everyone is tearing up at the moment. And there's just an incredible quality of bowlers out there. So in general, I feel unlucky for the batsman. But we might have to, a little bit like 70s and 80s, we might have to recalibrate what a good batsman is at the moment, and actually say, you know, the guy who averaged 30 in a series where everyone else averaged 22 is not too bad.
Should Alistair Cook still be playing?
Well, a lot of his numbers, his drop at the end of his career came on that era where bowlers were back in charge again. So, you know, I look, how old is he? 33, 34? We were in the West Indies when we stayed in the same hotel in one place, and he did a lot of fitness. So I literally saw Alistair Cook in the gym. I was pretending to be watching things on my phone, and I was watching Alistair Cook in the gym. There was nothing about Matt Prior. He looked a little bit former pro. Okay, Gareth Batty looked a little bit old guy hanging in right at the end there. Darren Goff, very much former pro, right?
Steve Harmison,
maybe not even pro. Alistair Cook looked like, you know, and I, you know, I've seen, you know, in these T20 leagues, I see these guys in the gym. He looked like a professional athlete still. He's young enough to be playing. Yes, does he want to come back for the next couple of years and face all these guys? Maybe not, but yeah, I think he is, you know, legitimately talented enough. And you could go to other guys too. You know, someone like Chris Rogers would be able to do a very good job for Australia at the top of the order now, you know, and he's a couple of years out of the game. They have some skills that some of the new generation maybe don't have, and they are also of a quality that we're not quite seeing at the moment, but they're also used to facing really good bowlers. But no one who's coming back in now is really going to be dominating. You know, Steve Smith is a freak. Kohli, Kane Williamson, Joe Root, if they can keep their averages around 50, I think they're doing incredibly well in this era.
Lol of the series. Producer Lucy, she was working at 4:30 in the a.m. to put this together. It's essentially educating Jarrod Kimber, and I'm glad to say I've done the educating. Let's have a listen.
But he didn't do that, so it's, I don't know, it's probably not a mistake. It's maybe a gaff. Was it a gaff? Is a gaff a mistake?
Yeah, it is. It is.
So that's why when we look in the mirror, we look so much more handsome than we are in real life.
Yeah, that is exactly why.
We live in a state at the moment, so we're sort of, is it Pavlov's dog? We're Pavlov's cat?
Schrodinger's cat.
We're Schrodinger's cat. That's the one. Pavlov's dog's one that.
Pavlov's dog is a cake. A dog no, eating
not.
A cake.
It's not a dog
in New Zealand.
You don't know what you're talking about. Not so much a rant, was it? Is it because I'm here? Can I not? I can't rant in front of. Is this a lake?
It is a lake, and no, it would be a little bit strange to be ranting about Jack Leach in front of, you know, two or three 6-year-olds on their bikes.
and not qualified straight away. So it would be different if Jofra Archer was qualified for England straight away, which you could argue he probably should have been, being that, you know, his father was a tube driver here. But can you, a tube driver? Or is it, yeah, I suppose you are a tube driver. Was he a tube driver? Or was it just other trains? It might have been overground trains. I'm in London, so I only know about the underground trains. But Cameron Bancroft didn't just put sandpaper in his pocket now, did he, John? He put it in his undies. He put it in... Did you say knickers?
Only for women.
Okay. Panties?
Only for women.
Okay. White fronts?
Only for men.
Okay. Well, as we stand here with the ducklings beneath us... Is that a duckling? I think it's a duck. It's a bird, anyway. It's a baby bird in water.
It's a baby coot.
Okay.
I think it's a moorhen, actually, not a coot.
Knickers?
4:30 in the morning she was working. That's ridiculous.
A lot of people like my voice, and I can see why she wouldn't stay up and listen to it. On the Pavlov's dog and Schrodinger's cat, could they not have used other animals? They're too interchangeable, cats and dogs. What I need is a hedgehog and a snake, or a ferret and something that's not a turtle, something that's not like a ferret. I always get those two confused. I know what the two studies are, but I can never remember which person and which animal goes with which.
You know, at the start of the Ashes, what we talked about was that these are two flawed teams with different flaws, different strengths, and that we thought would actually make for a really compelling series, and we were right. But shall we just rattle through? If we can come up with 11 mistakes, I'll start off with Tim Payne's use of DRS at Headingley and throughout the series. What about yours?
Yeah, I think we have to mention the umpiring. I don't think it was always of poor quality, but it was certainly not good.
Jason Roy's opener.
Joe Denley's opener. I know he made runs, but it still, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Actually, he probably made more runs as opener than he did at four.
That's very true. Marcus Harris as opener.
David Warner as opener.
Cameron Bancroft as opener.
Okay, so we're up to seven. Playing Jimmy Anderson at Edgerton, that's eight.
Peter Siddle coming back in for the last test.
That's nine. Tim Payne opting to bowl first at the Oval, that's 10.
Do we have an 11? I'm trying to think. There must have been something else. No, I've got nothing. I'm trying to think.
Doobie-doobie-doo. Okay, well, 10. 10 mistakes. There must be one more.
Sending Steve Smith back out to bat at Lords.
Yes! Well done.
I mean, he shouldn't have been back out there. This whole thing about concussion protocols and everything, I'm glad he passed the concussion protocols. He was quite clearly not in any normal state to go out and bat, though, was he? And what was Justin Langer's comment? What was I going to do? Stop him? Yeah, that's what managers do, Justin.
Moment of the series. Moment of the series is got to be Steve Smith, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's Jofra Smith, isn't it? It's that spell, really, as much as anything. No, actually, I take it back. I think it's Ben Stokes. I think it's the Ben Stokes innings. We're not going to see too many more things like that. It's funny, we've seen a couple of incredible chases, you know, the Sri Lanka one and England's one here.
Can I just say one thing, all right? I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate here a little bit. But see, what Ben Stokes achieved was extraordinary for an hour, more to do with the state of the game rather than actually what he did out in the field, which was score 150-odd, or whatever he scored, I can't even remember. Isn't what Steve Smith did in the first test actually more extraordinary? It's just that he essentially produced a match-saving century after all the reasons you gave at the top of the show. Match-saving century in first innings. And that inning spat, you know, it was extraordinary throughout, and it was chanceless as well. And then he had a match-winning innings in second innings. All of this after being out of the game for a year. At Edgbaston, which is the 16th most intimidating ground in world cricket, in an Ashes test at the start of the series. No?
No, because there's only been 20-odd chases of over 300 in the history of test cricket or whatever. I forget how many there is, 30 maybe. He did
good stat.
And he did it with the tail in an Ashes test where they were behind against one of the best bowling attacks in the world.
Fair enough.
Smith did incredibly, but Anderson was down in that test, only bowled four overs. Smith was incredible, but it was an incredible innings. Whereas if you're talking about the actual moment of the series, which we are in this segment, that's what we're doing, John. If that's the case, then I think for moment of the series, you're not going to get much better than Ben Stokes. We went on to TalkSport to talk on their press show of the name I've forgotten. Is it called The Press Show? Ah, look at that.
No, it's not. I can't remember what it's called.
We went on that to talk about it. And, you know, they were so excited that they brought us on. Two cricket experts. It was 38 people in that studio. And they talked to us for about an hour about this innings, which tells you how incredible it was. But we said at the time that it really does depend on whether England used that to go on and win or not. And they obviously didn't go on to win. They've ended up with a draw at the end, partly because of that innings. But no one's ever going to stop talking about that innings anyway. How many people are going to remember the score line in Sri Lanka, South Africa, over the fact that, you know, Kusa Pereira played that innings? And we see that a lot. You know, the Botham's Ashes is a little bit different, but you see these incredible moments. You know, even Mark Butcher's innings are still talked about a lot, right? And that was in a losing series and a dead rubber, because they don't come along that often. And there's a feeling now that they're coming along more often, but it's only because we're playing more tests. It's actually just as hard to chase over 300 as it's ever been. That might change, but it hasn't over the last couple of years. So if that's the case, we're not going to see too many more innings. In our lifetime, we're not going to see more than a handful of innings that good. And we have lucky lifetimes because we travel around following these things. But even then, we're not going to see. How many tests have you seen? I've seen about 160, 170. You've probably seen about the same. We're not going to see too many more moments of that. We are going to see more moments like Steve Smith's.
Probably by Steve Smith.
He does it a lot. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And look, that's not to downplay what Steve Smith does, because that's why he was at the top of the show. He had a pretty damn handy series. But for moments, for me, Ben Stokes was on another level.
Brilliant stuff. Jared, myself, will be back on the following on podcast. We're not sure exactly when or what the template will be or what we're going to be talking about. But thanks for being with us throughout this incredible summer of 2019. And, of course, TalkSport will be following England's tours abroad to New Zealand next month for myself. And then myself and Jared will be back in South Africa. So hopefully you'll join us throughout that. So subscribe and review on iTunes and Acast. And thanks for joining us here on the following on podcast.
The following on podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism. And this is your gentle reminder that Barbados is the best place to be a cricket fan. With 8 matches from the ICC Men's T20 Cricket World Cup Series taking place in Barbados this summer, including the final, you can experience the summer of a lifetime by booking today. Aside from immersing in world-class cricket in the sunshine, Barbados is the dream destination for all travel enthusiasts. It is where adventure meets paradise, the culinary capital of the Caribbean, and better still, the birthplace of rum. If you're keen to unite with cricket fans across the globe for what is set to be an unforgettable summer, then head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.